There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live at the Yellow Dragon Journal podcast. This is your co-host Igor, and as always with me is my co-host Nixon. Say hi, Nixon.
Hello, you wonderful people.
We are actually back from, like, what, finally just a two-week break?
Only 2 weeks this time.
Hooray! And since this is our, what is this year, fifth anniversary?
Yeah.
This is our fifth anniversary episode. We decided to bring back an old guest. Say hi, old guest.
Hi, old guest. This is Kevin Crone, guest host and host of the So Many Insane Plays podcast.
We haven't heard from you in like 2 years, and we decided to bring you back because I was actually just looking for an opportunity to get you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a little overdue, I would say. I really enjoyed talking to you last time, and here we are again. I'm glad to be here.
You are free to just tell me, yo, I want to jump on the podcast, and then we'll make something. That's not a problem.
All right, fair enough. We'll
do. You're not a stranger.
Indeed.
So, how have your weeks been, last couple of number of weeks?
Well, it's tumultuous times that we live in, and we were discussing, obviously, before the recording, that the current epidemic shaping our world has obviously impacted magic, and it has impacted my life. I have the fortunate benefit of being a regular work from home individual, so the professional quarantining that has gone on for so many companies the world over has not actually changed my day-to-day work, which is nice. But it also means that a lot of my friends in the magic community, especially in addition to my family, of course, have been impacted with cancellations of magic fests and things like that. I am personally going to be playing larger groups for the foreseeable future. That means some of my F&M gatherings, for example, for EDH, which are normally 40 or 50 people in an LGS, for example, I think I'm going to shy away from that. But the good news is that I do have a smallish play group of local friends that we can get together at people's homes and keep our gatherings down to 4 or 5 people at once. So I'm still doing some of that. So, long story short, I am still getting together to play a fair bit of EDH on a regular basis lately.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's the bright side.
That's the bright side.
Niksha, your week? Or weeks?
My weeks? Well, I did. I still did visit our local game store. But not as often as usual. And it was pretty, like, there were less people than usual. And just recently they announced that they won't be hosting any events until the situation calms down. And so I'll probably be playing some Commander when we, like, make some arrangements and gather, like, the 4 or 8 of us, something like that.
Oh, yeah. At least the bright side with the coronavirus, with my work, is that it has finally lessened down a bit. Because they were swamping us week after week after week, and then coronavirus showed up, and everybody started panicking.
What was the actual decision from your work?
We're still working until further notice. Which, you know, is fun because we are one of the most exposed people to the coronavirus.
Yeah. Are you making special amends to stay safer at work?
I mean, we always have been washing our hands and using the hand sanitizer.
That's good.
Because that's just a professional thing to do, so we do it all the time.
Professional is like that the necessary thing you have to do.
But yeah, that's the normal thing to do when somebody's handling your food.
I mean,
naturally.
I always thought about that, about washing hands on a regular basis as like the normal thing to do every day, and suddenly people are like, people wash your hands. I was like, people don't wash their hands?
Just like when you have warnings on a bag of walnuts that says this may contain walnuts, the warnings are not here because of you. There is a less smart person than you somewhere who's, you know, who isn't thinking, period.
I think that's a good analogy.
Also, PSA people, don't go into your local shops and buy all the freaking toilet paper.
Indeed.
Like, holy crap.
Also, don't go to your local game stores and ask for the toilet paper. They probably don't have it.
Yep. Like, if the coronavirus hits properly, there'll be a bunch of people need who actually need the goddamn toilet paper. And you hoarding it is helping nobody.
True.
At least one happy thing, Tess and I were at the local store to buy a couple things last night to make dinner. And there was a queue of people, but only one of them were having, you know, a bunch of stuff. Everybody else was just having a normal amount of stuff. So people are still acting coolly and collected.
Yeah, I don't think that the panic hit our city as hard.
Or just yet.
I don't know. I don't have the feeling that we here in Zagreb are that panic prone.
You say that, but I was walking to that same store and saw a bunch of the racks empty. I never seen that place empty before.
No. Okay. I guess I just don't go out enough.
So some people are panicking, and that's causing other people to panic, because if they're panicking, maybe we should panic as well. And that's causing a stupid loop.
Mm-hmm.
People should just calm down and buy the normal amount of stuff they would usually need.
I think there's a mixture of understanding about what the purpose of so much quarantining really is vis-a-vis this outbreak. And I think a lot of people are interpreting the message here as we're preparing for global breakdown of society, right? When that's not really the primary message or goal of so much of the quarantining.
Yep. And yet. People like to panic over stuff, and they should actually calm the heck down. I was expecting more of Croatian people, because we are the people who are super bitter and already jaded by so many stuff. That's what I was expecting people to be actually a bit calmer about it.
We should install thunderdomes in front of stores.
Honestly, I would be fine with that.
So everybody has equal opportunity to grab supplies.
I mean, either that or do the thing I saw people doing in Costco in America. People would go to the toilet paper section, and people would be handing them just one big package. That's all you get. Just one.
Yeah.
But
I had heard of some stores locally doing that, yeah.
That's also a smart thing to do, just ration everything.
We're not here to talk about smart things. So.
Let's talk about happy things, like, you know, Commander of the Week.
Yes.
Kevin, did you have a Commander of the Week?
I do, in fact, and it's an interesting scenario. My Commander of the Week is two commanders. It's Rayon and Ludovic.
Ooh.
Now, the deck in question is an interesting story, because it's really one of those decks that's built around a non-commander card. And then the rest of the deck and the experience was molded around it. That non-commander card is Fairy Artisans.
Oh,
are you familiar with Fairy Artisans?
Of course we are.
Yeah. So I have had a number of copies of Fairy Artisans. And every time I go to build a deck, it doesn't meet the criteria, whatever, for that deck. But then I'm thumbing through my cards and I say, oh, Fairy Artisans, I should put that in. It never really fits right in a deck, because it's unpredictable in its value, what it's going to generate exactly. And so I've never quite committed to putting it in anything. Well, I decided to change that because I think the card is awesome and hilarious. And so this whole deck is basically just geared around extracting value from my Fairy Artisans in various different ways. Initially getting it into play, so there's a little bit of a light tutoring. I've got Survival of the Fittest and Demonic, right, to find it. But then it's really focused around how do I get value from this recursive token creatures entering play. I've got lots of sac outlets. I've got lots of things that affect creatures coming into play or dying, right? And obviously the fairy artisans themselves aren't, they're pretty stingy, right? They destroy, they exile everything they've made, right? So it's hard to have any residual value from the tokens they've made. But I found a couple of cute ways to do it, like Vesuvian Shapeshifter, for example, allows me to kind of temporarily retain a copy of one thing I might like, and also a card that I had barely even heard of before. Now, note, I'm not in white here, so I had to look outside of white for populate effects, and there's only one recursive populate ability that's not in white, and that's a card called Selesnian Eulogist. Are you familiar with this card? It's 2G. It's 2G for a 3-3, and it has an activated ability, which is 2G colon, exile a creature in a graveyard and populate. So it's a little bit of a limited ability, but I can make copies of particular fairy artisan creatures if I like them.
That's from C19, right?
Yes, it is.
I haven't heard of the card.
What's that?
I haven't heard of that card, but okay.
Yeah, well, I hadn't either. I just was doing a search for populate because I knew it was a way that I could keep some value artifact creatures in play. So
it was printed in the Naya deck last year.
Yeah, the otherwise populate deck from that year. Yeah. So anyway, I've been playing that deck. The rest of the deck is filled out with some good value stuff and some stuff to keep me from dying. I'm also playing another card that mimics fairy artisans a fair bit, I would say, and that is Ophiomancer, right?
Oh yeah.
A cheap way to get an artifact, and that's not an artifact creature, but a token creature every turn. So that's synergistic with various sac outlets. And then I'm also playing one other card that just really is one that I've always wanted to play and never found the home for, and that is Sudden Spoiling.
Ooh, sudden I love spoiling. Sudden Spoiling.
And it has already ruined so many otherwise amazing attacks from my opponents. It's so satisfying. I love it.
It stops everything.
Basically, yes.
Oh,
except equipment.
The
equipment still tends to do its thing, but otherwise.
If your opponent goes to win with Doomsday, well, guess what happens?
Yeah. So I've been playing that deck a fair bit lately and tuning it. It's like I said, it's got a lot of stuff in there designed to keep me alive because, well, I was trying not to be a combo deck. I was trying to be a value deck. But it just so happens that the very last game I played, which incidentally was last night, I did actually win the game with effectively a six card combo because I had Dockside Extortionist, which is just in there for the value. It's fantastic. But I also had Eternal Witness and Ghostly Flicker, right? So if you're paying attention, Ghostly Flicker plus those two creatures, assuming the Dockside Extortionist is giving you four or more treasures, it's just infinite treasures because you just flicker the Dockside and the Witness and get the flicker back every time. Well, I did that, and then I switched to flickering Eternal Witness and Woestrider. Woestrider, thereby giving me unbounded sheep. That didn't mean goats. Excuse me, goats. And then I sacked all those goats to Bantu the Glorified to drain my opponents out.
Sheesh.
So that combo was how I won my last game, which is pretty exciting. I didn't build it that way. But
that's what we call a Rube Goldberg machine.
Yeah, precisely. This deck is not intended to be like two card or three card combos that win the game, but you give me five cards and I'm you know, all bets are off.
Damn.
Now, wow. I will say in my defense too that the player who was about to take the turn after me was about to untap with three copies of Sunbird's Invocation and Bolas's Citadel in play.
Huh.
So, yeah. So I think I was doing everybody a favor by ending that game.
I mean, somebody was going to end it anyway.
That's right. My play group in particular is totally enamored with Sunbird's Invocation. We've got a couple of players who basically put it in every possible deck, and we frequently have games with players having two to three copies of Sunbird's Invocation because we're so enamored with it.
I haven't seen that in a long while. I think Nyxia is the last player I've seen play.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the only one playing it in probably the whole city.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm playing it just because it's foiled.
Oh, it's a beautiful foil.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, so anyway, that's my commander of the week. It's serving me very well. I might need to tune down the power a little bit. I think some of my playgroup are getting a little annoyed at how good it is, but it's mostly because it's very defensive. It's a very high-value deck where I just get a lot of value out of my creatures dying and everything, so almost everything they do to me generates value, and that's just an effective formula in my experience.
Doesn't seem like that powerful of a deck, but you know.
It's not. It really isn't. It's just if you let me put in any eight or ten of my permanents, they tend to very synergistically go together. Oh, for example, I added Korvold to the deck, and we all know how ridiculous Korvold is, right?
Yeah.
Well, I've got, like, I don't know, 10 cards in the deck that do sacrifices in one way or another. Korvold plus Dockside Extortionist? That just shouldn't be allowed, right? So that's one of the examples. And I've got a whole bunch of sack out. That's like Goblin Bombardment and Woestrider and Bantu and other things. So
Evolving Violets and Korvold is a stupid combination.
Well, it's one of the things I kind of wanted to talk to you about, the two of you, is a lot of the conversations that have been going on lately about proxies. And we don't have to dive into that whole topic, but one of the things that has touched on is the expense of mana bases in the format. And this is a well-trod area. I probably don't need to tell anyone in your audience about that. But I'm one of those local players whose decks that are 2 to 4 colors tend to start with, right, 6 to 9 fetch lands, depending on the color combination.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have an old collection, I've got revised duels or older versions of them. And so I just enjoy doing that. I'm a vintage player, right? I want to have my reliable mana base and my flexibility of casting the spells in whatever sequence I want. That's just something that I appreciate about the format. Well, that kind of player and that kind of deck and that kind of mana base makes Korvold inherently even more busted than he already is.
Yep.
Just because you just happen to have a handful of lands that are going to draw you cards. And it doesn't take many of those, you know, over the course of a turn or three to just generate that much more value than a player with an even, say, Pioneer-style mana base would. And that's just one of those things that, because of my collection and the way I build decks, Korvold is just inherently going to be even more broken for me than the average player in my community.
I mean, personally, I'm all up for proxying. Proxy whatever the hell you want.
On the other hand, I'm like, I'm not for proxying. It's like, if you're gonna proxy something, you're gonna get, or you're proxying something you already have somewhere else and it's a more expensive card and you don't want to get other copies, then it's fine, but I always prefer the path of if you don't have that card or you don't have additional copies and don't really want a proxy, then trying to find alternative ways to replace those kind of cards. Like, for instance, I do have only one Enlightened Tutor, and I should be running it in 2 of my decks, but I decided to put in Idyllic Tutor in one of them, just because I'm not gonna get another Enlightened Tutor.
Yeah. You see, I would like to get something like Original Duels, but Reserved List is a dumb thing that exists, and I don't think it's gonna go anytime soon, so...
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree.
And
well,
it's not worth that money.
Yeah, we don't have to retread the whole proxies issue here, but I am very aware of the fact that in the case like the Enlightened Tutor example that you just listed, the constraint of wanting a type of card but not having access to it, giving you an inspiration to play some other card, an Idyllic Tutor in this case, I think that's fantastic. I think that kind of constraint breeding creativity is a benefit. And I think different kinds of constraints exist in different ways. I don't like the financial one just because I don't want to keep anyone out of playing this game with me the way they want to, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the creativity that you have uncovered in working with that constraint is, I think, to your benefit. It's great. It's awesome. And I'm not immune to that personally. But I am the sort of player who just writes up a list of cards first and then goes and assembles them. And if I don't have a second copy of Enlightened Tutor or a fourth or fifth copy of Scalding Tarn, then I just proxy it. But that's my approach.
Still fair. Completely fair point.
Miksha, did you have a commander of the week?
While I was thinking between Sisse and Kiker, I'm still not sure if it's Kiker or Kiker or Kiakar or whatever.
It's a bird.
It's a bird, but I think that my true commander of the week would be the Tybalt.
Oh, God.
So, since this isn't a commander-related story, I'm going to go ahead and pass the commander of the week to you, Igor, first.
I have decided to pimp Alesha a bit up. So I'm getting a Dark Confidant, finally. Because the prices have tanked on Dark Confidant, and I'm like, okay, I'll get one right now. And as I was going to go to the Magic Card Market to get one, I saw a fun thing happen. The Talia from the Secret Lair was put on market, and I was like, oh no. And that's how I got one. You know, the Phoenix Wright one. When she's fighting the Draven Council. That one. Because that art is gorgeous, and as soon as it is available to get as a print, I'll get that as a print. But holy crap.
Yeah, man loves his Talia.
I really love my Talia, love my taxing effects. Only problem is, where do I put that new Talia? In Heliod, or do I put it in Alesha?
I think you put it in Alesha.
Yeah, but I also love the Talia I got from you, the WPM promo.
I think you're gonna go... No, I definitely think you should put in Alesha and put the promo in Heliod.
I mean, I'm playing both the decks approximately the same amount of time, so... Also, fun thing, Tessel also decided to buy a couple of cards. So, one Blast Nemaya, one Polluted Delta, one Wooded Foothills.
We were just mentioning Fetchlands.
Yep. Nice. And she did put previously mentioned Korvald into her Prosh.
Oh, jeez.
So, he needs more food now.
That's just filthy.
That, and she did recently get Lotus Cobra, which also works really well with Fetchlands.
Very much so.
So she's going to be stomping my face with those things quite soon. Hooray. But yeah, Niksha, do you have the Tybalt story?
Okay, so... I was experimenting with a new modern deck, like with Rakdos, and I wanted to build it around just generating value from my graveyard. So, including the Lightning Skelemental and the Shaman that that reanimates it tapped and attacking. The Thunderkin Awakener.
Aye.
Add some Unearths to the deck. Dreadhorde Arcanist. So, Arcanist can recast Unearth to bring back anything. Even a random Kroxa that's in. Include some cycling options, like the new, what's it called, Thrill of Possibility, is it? And and the Merchant of the Veil. And also some good cards like Fatal Push and Lightning Bolt, all that can be recasted with the Arcanist, yeah.
Naturally.
Instead of the, I don't have that Ox, or the Bedlam Reveler, so I was using the Rick Smadi guy that discards your hand and draws three cards if you pay the spectacle cost.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And it was doing kind of fine, and then our good friend Mate said, you know what you should do? You should put in Tybalt. I was like, that's like a horrible idea. No. Oh, by the way, I also have four Demigods of Revenge in the deck, just because.
Niksha, I don't think the sentence "you should put in the original Tybalt" into your deck has ever been uttered in the history of humanity.
So, and he said, and then he said this, that if I put Tybalt in, he's going to take the deck and play it in the modern tournament.
Nice.
And then I was like, okay, you're on. And so I did. I removed Arcanist, since I was running low on actual fodder for him, because I replaced some lightning bolts with the Fiery Temper, because it's better with all these discard outlets. And I borrowed some Liliana of the Veil from a friend. And that was it. I had 4 Tybalts in the deck, in my modern deck, which I now call Tybalt's Funhouse. And he didn't show up for the modern tournament, because he had to work late. And I was like, okay. I mean, I didn't build this for nothing. I could be using my Mono Blue Tron now, but let's go with the Tybalt, because somebody has to play them. And so I did. And it was, let me say, it was definitely an experience. I went 2-3 with the deck, which was infinitely times better than I thought it would be. One game, I managed to get Tybalt to 8 counters, but going -6 wouldn't actually do anything because I was playing against walls, and they don't do anything when I take them.
Against what?
Against walls.
What?
Yes.
Were you playing against yourself?
No. I think. You know,
popular modern staple walls.
Nixia is the only person I know that played walls ever, so what?
He's playing tribal walls with those enchantments that make walls attack, so that's basically the deck.
I thought you were going to say that Arcades was his commander.
He doesn't even run Arcades in his deck. Anyhow, I lost that one because I can't get through the walls. And some of the walls have Shroud and Flying, and I can't get through that.
Wow.
So, next game was against Burn, and it was pretty... It was looking really good for me, like, playing Lightning Skelemental into Lightning Skelemental, draining his hand, but then I died to a stupid Eidolon, to the stupid Eidolon trigger. Because he kept his burn just to kill me in response to him dying.
Wow. Spite is strong in that one.
So I lost against burn, but it was kind of close. It was close. I also played against mono green Stompy aggro. I won that game, and that was the first time I ever witnessed somebody consciously... unironically attack Tybalt.
Wow.
Excellent.
I also won against mono green devotion. I had some pretty good discards and unearths, so you know, draining people's hands with the lightning skelemental is pretty fun. And I barely lost against Yawgmoth, the combo deck.
Mm-hmm.
And some interesting moments were, it's my turn 4, I have like 5 lands in hand, and I have a Demigod of Revenge in my hand. And there's a Demigod of Revenge in the graveyard, so I'm like, okay, so I have 5 lands, I have a Demigod, and I have a Tybalt on the board. So what would be great is, since I already have Tybalt out, I feel obliged that I need to plus one him. And, you know, he just doesn't have to discard the Demigod of Revenge. He's going to have 7 targets. I have enough lands, so anything he discards will be fine. Unless it's Demigod of Revenge. And Tybalt has spoken, and he discarded demigod of revenge.
As he usually does, yes.
Yep.
And a couple of... It just happens so that plus one-ing Tybalt just doesn't really win you the game, like, ever. It more actively loses you the game than the other way around.
You sound surprised.
I'm not. Although, I did win a couple of the games I did win did include Tybalt in on the field, but it also included Liliana of the Veil on the field. Which makes me think that maybe Liliana of the Veil is slightly better than Tybalt.
See, I'm glad that our listeners are coming here for our cutting edge technology.
Right.
You heard it here first.
Just to be perfectly clear, I never ever sideboarded Tybalt out. I always played Tybalt, and only once did I discard him to draw more cards, and that was because he was literally, like, the only sane decision to make. Like, all the other cards, I physically need these to actually play some magic.
Isn't it weird how different experiences you can have from another person? Like, Niksha and I, we don't share this experience, but yet here we are, on the same planet.
So, Tybalt performed, well, surprisingly well. I mean, it wasn't really the Tybalt that performed well, it was the rest of the deck that didn't get randomly discarded. And I think that if I didn't actually play any Tybalts, I would have, like, at least 4-1. So I learned a valuable lesson that day.
Did you go straight from 0 Tybalts in the deck to 4 Tybalts in the deck?
Yes.
Okay, that's pretty pedal to the metal right there.
That was the condition under which our friend would be playing Modern with us. And he didn't show up, so, you know, I just have to. I had to. And if we're talking Commander, then I'm going to go with CSA.
Yeah, I actually forgot we were even talking about Commander. I was too engrossed into this Tybalt story. We have some actual things to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to tackle first?
Well, we did mention fetch lands.
Oh, yeah. So, do we have, like, a kidney and a half to talk about?
Probably. It's gonna take a bit more than that.
I mean, it doesn't have to be your kidney.
Good point.
So, why are we mentioning fetch lands, Niksha?
So remember all that, I don't actually remember if I ever talked it on the show.
You have.
Okay, so they're actually printing Fetchlands in the Secret Lair.
First time they mentioned Secret Lairs, Niksha, you said, no, they should be making Fetchlands, that's all the money. Turns out, it is all the money.
It is all the money, but they're also doing it in all the wrong ways.
So Niksha, take it away.
So, they're gonna do a fetch land drop in a secret lair. They're gonna put the 5 enemy fetch lands, so the most expensive ones, all with alternate art, and some of them include John Avon. Actually, just... No, wait, that... No, not...
John Avon is one of them.
It's one, Seb McKinnon is other, and I don't actually know... I don't think I know these three artists. By name.
I mean, I'm looking at the artist names and it doesn't say John Avon on any of them.
It does, Arid Mason.
Oh, yeah. There's the... On Arid Mason you can see the signature singular light source.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bright spot that John Avon always puts in his lands.
Yeah, he likes that.
Yeah. Anyhow, the lands look amazing. They're not foil, which is actually a positive thing, because you can play them in your modern decks without any fear of, you know, having just those lands foiled and somebody calling you out.
I think that's a noteworthy positive for this product.
And it's really cool, and well, that's where the cool stuff, the cool parts for me end. It's called the Secret Lair Ultimate Edition, and it's going to be available in local game stores in a limited quantity. I think it's like 10 per store.
10 per store, maximally.
Maximum 10 per store. And they said that if MSRP was a thing, they would be $165. So they expect the actual price to be a bit over $165. And, I mean, that's all the info we got. They also said that Fetchlands will be available this year outside of this product as well. Some of them will be random drops if you order the summer Secret Lair drop of the whole set of five. You'll get a random Fetchland, which is actually really cool. That's like super neat. And other
but you have
ways
to spend a lot for that.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's, you have to buy five sets. So, assuming the sets are at about $50 a piece, at $250, and you get a fetch land thrown in.
But maybe the sets are worth that money. Who knows?
That's fair. They frequently are. That's true.
So let's just talk about how this is. Let's just go. What do you guys think about this before I start about with my angry rant?
I mean, I know what your rant is going to be about, and I'm mostly, yeah, on your side. They're doing it. This is not going to end up well, because it's going to end up hoarded like this from the shops. If you get even a decent quantity of it. Most shops are going to get, like, what? 1, 2?
Three,
and that's
going to
be slaughter. Yeah, but I'm thinking, if your shop isn't, you know, the big shop in the city, like, 1, 2, maybe 3?
Yeah.
That...
Not even a playset.
The big box is extremely unecological. We mentioned that earlier, before the podcast.
It's really
because you'll just take out the 5 fetchlands and just...
I mean, chuck the box. You don't need it.
And even if you keep the box, you're not going to keep the foam inside. Because what you're going to do with it? It's still clutter.
Like, you're going to use it as a display case, but I don't think that Magic players, like, use display cases to show their cards. They use their decks to show off their cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do, at least.
Yes, I don't think that displaying Magic cards is a very common practice.
It is if you're a shop.
Well, fair enough.
And that's basically it.
Yeah. I do think that the shop aspect is a big win for this, though. The fact that they're handing these to LGSs is at least in our current times, a pretty rare bone to an LGS for some extra profits. And it's, ironically, they could not have predicted this, of course, but it's coming at a time when I think local shops are going to suffer more than the average year, what with the epidemic. So I think that part, above, in addition to many other downfalls, is a pretty big win.
Yeah, supporting local game stores through products like these is really, really good. However...
Lay on it.
So, my... biggest problem with this product is that it's called a Secret Lair, for first. Because the idea of Secret Lairs is that they're online purchases only, unlimited supply, and they go between $40 and $50, right?
Yeah.
And that's all. And they're available for one day, and that's it. So they're kind of like, just grab them if you can. It's a cool idea to get some really cool art, really cool ideas, really cool cards into the hands of the players. Basically, it's them selling singles, even though they don't acknowledge the single market. This, however, does not meet any of the criteria. It's stupidly expensive, so it's not going to be $165. It's going to be... Let's just go with more than that.
Niksha, even if it is just $165, there's still going to be shipping and all those things to think about, and that's going to raise the cost on its own.
Yeah. So it's a limited supply, so it won't affect the prices of actual fetches at all. What else? Oh yeah, I mean, just the fact that it's limited supply and not a normal regular secret lair drop is what's really bothering me. I mean, it's a super expensive set for just 5 cards.
Plus, they could have given it more than 10 to each shop. That would have been nice.
I mean, they could have made it like a special secret lair that's available to shops, but, like, it will be available in multiple waves, I guess.
They could have done that, but it would be less, you know, hype.
And one more gripe I have with this is because of this sentence. Why are we making Fetch happen again in 2020? Well, it is the year of Commander, after all, and many players enjoy these special lands in their multicolor decks. Plus, we know players need these for Modern, and we haven't printed new versions of these since 2017. So, everything they say in this sentence doesn't make sense with the product they're making.
Yeah.
Because I remember them stating that they don't really want fetches in Commander because they don't think it's the kind of players that would, like, really, really need them as much. And
yes, yet... people who like to throw thousands of euros or dollars on foils would really hate fetchlands. That's the type of player that would hate it.
And saying that, plus we know players need these for Modern. Well, it's nice that they still acknowledge Modern. But saying this and then making it limited supply, it's really like you're not helping anyone. This is not reprinting Fetchlands. This is like getting the whales to spend their money.
Yeah. And I think that last sentiment is key to how unfriendly to the player base and misleading this is to be called a reprint, right? This is in no way infusing the community with a sufficient supply of this product to impact price in any positive direction. And we don't know the exact price, but at $165, it's already a little more than half the cost of these cards already at retail, TCG meaning retail, something like that. And we know $165 is not the reality. So my guess is you're going to end up paying probably 75 to 80% of, or more, of the cost of these things already. You're just effectively buying fetch lands at market price from Wizards.
Hooray!
Which is not a reprint, right? Because reprints, you know, speaking in rough economic terms, the part of the purpose of reprints is to lower the cost so that players can acquire them for less than they can acquire them today. If you just sell them at their current rate, that doesn't accomplish that.
Also, you're not buying them from your shops. You're fighting tooth and nail to get the privilege of spending money to get basically the same price for fetchlands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so there's one, I guess, small silver lining in this particular line of discussion, which is that if you can't get one of these because your shop marked them up to $200 or $250 and they just sold them anyway, hey, good news. Just spend $250 and buy a set of fetch lands.
Yep.
Because that's about what they go for. I mean, if you average it out, it's about $280, okay? So I'm being a little glib on purpose. But the point is you're not that far out from having gotten a good deal anyway. I mean, just buy the fetch lands from your LGS.
Our playgroup is fully expecting this to go to like 300.
In the aftermarket, sure. Yeah, even if you're lucky enough to get
in the shop. We're expecting the shop to be like that.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. In some cases, I expect a lot of shops to sell them for 200. I expect a lot of shops to sell them for 250 and 300 too.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not unreasonable. And it's, when you think about it, and this is just one small point, but when you think about it, I consider these fetch lands to be more valuable than the originals just because the new art, right? I consider alternate art to be exciting, and they're going to be rare. And so they should be in the secondary market worth more than the original fetches for multiple reasons.
Yeah, but they probably will be, but it still feels so bad when they do it like this.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. This is not the kind of reprint that fetch is needed. This is entirely for the whales, as you said, and it's just not meeting the need that players really need.
The mythical whales and collectors.
Yeah. The same people they're keeping the reserve list for, right?
Oh, yeah. Do we want to open that can of worms?
I don't think we do.
Because I have violent opinions on that topic.
Don't we all?
I'm not inviting that. I'm just poking the bear there.
I just don't understand why they would block, this is the basic part of Magic, our lands. And having a consistent mana base is the most important thing you need in a game of Magic, and they're purposely locking it behind a paywall like this.
You know what's nice about these new cards? That people will have nice shiny, I mean not shiny, but fancy non-basic mountains in the play, if they play against me. That's nice though.
Yeah, these will be really nice mountains.
That will be the moment of my victory. Just, you know, locking this as mountains.
That would actually be the funniest thing ever if they actually made a secret lair that had a bunch of... If the summer drop of secret lair is just a bunch of non-basic lands, but they all have mountain as their art.
You know what I would like them to start selling wizards themselves? Did you see those sleeves that basically alter the look of the card?
Yeah.
They could do something like over the normal sleeve, but make it into like elk border, mountain border, and things like that. That'd be a cool thing to just, you know, sell to players.
Agreed. Yeah. It'd be very fun.
I should start making those and selling those. Sadly, I have no artistic talent, so...
That's all we have to say about this secret lair, quotation marks.
Something brighter is coming, though, in Literally and Paneer. Signature spellbook, Chandra. Yeah. I'm actually okay with that one. It's gonna be fun too. Yeah?
The signature spellbook is a totally different animal, right?
Yes.
It's, for one, it's not for whales, right?
Yep.
It's far more affordable. The value's there, but also it contains an interesting selection of cards, and it still has a randomized element to it, what with the foiling.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, the two cards that they revealed are good enough to justify the whole set, in my eyes, because Chandra, Torch of Defiance, and Past in Flames are two incredibly, incredibly good cards, and the frame that they've created for Chandra's set with a big fire down at the bottom is just, that's beautiful. It's fantastic.
I might just pick it up because I'm liking the look of this Chandra. Past in Flames I don't even need because not the decks I play, but Chandra though.
Yeah.
The original one of these was released when they were still doing MSRP, was it not? Do you remember what that price was? Was it 20, 30, 40 bucks? I don't remember.
I think it was 20 bucks.
Yeah, I remember it being very cheap. That's just an incredible value, in my opinion.
Our shop was selling it for 169 kuna, which is like 24, 25.
There you go. Sure. Oh, that's a good product. That's player-friendly pricing right there. Quality cards.
The Gideon one was also going for the same price, I think.
Yep.
Because they were like, there's no sense for us to overmark this product, you know.
I think that the Gideon one was more successful than the Jace one, just because it had some like modern staples in it.
Rest in Peace?
And Path to Exile?
Yeah.
Well, now it has a commander staple, the Shielded by Faith.
Yeah, that actually did become a commander staple, didn't it?
It also had Martyr's Bond, which I wouldn't go so far as to call it staple, but is obviously a commander-targeted card.
Mm-hmm. And it had that one card that everybody wants to win with, but nobody managed to near that experience.
right.
I so want to win with that card, but it's so difficult.
What do you two think about the card Chandra Torch of Defiance in EDH?
Yes.
I love it.
I would play it, especially if playing something that I like to play that's prison and taxing decks.
Yeah.
The whole board is stalled, and let's do it.
It's really, really good. Both of her pluses are situationally fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. She functions like a mana rock when you need her to, which is awesome. And card draw when you need her to. I love it. Mm-hmm. And she cleans up pesky things when you need her to. Yeah. And her ultimate is a real, real threat.
I mean, we always focus just on the like first couple of abilities. Ultimate is not a thing you should focus on, but Chandra, Torch of Defiance, should be played in more text decks so you could actually realistically come to the -7.
Yeah, agreed. And she's at 5 the turn you play her. It's not like she's a long time coming, right? The fact that she has 2 pluses that allow you to do different things when you need to is just incredible. There's not many walkers that can say that.
She's basically 2 mana the turn you play her.
Yeah. I think she's underutilized. And my playgroup is not representative of the whole world, but I don't see her, I think, as much as you should. I think part of that might be residual price memory from when she was like a $50 card in Standard or whatever.
Yeah,
but
that's
no longer the case.
And it could be just the fear of, oh no, it's a Planeswalker in a multiplayer format.
Great.
Yeah, but it's a Planeswalker that can actually clear stuff.
Mm-hmm. But it's also the Planeswalker doesn't win the game right now, so people might leave it alone for like turn or two.
Yeah.
They shouldn't, but maybe they will. Maybe they'll print a Red Elemental Blast or a Pyroblast in this one.
Yeah, they...
I was about to ask, what predictions do you have for the cards? Because my big question is Lightning Bolt. You think Lightning Bolt is in here?
Oh, yes.
Lightning Bolt would be fantastic, but I don't think that Chandra actually knows how to cast Lightning Bolt.
I think that's an excellent point. It's not really her characteristic to cast Lightning Bolt. She's much more of a fireball kind of lady.
But Cathartic Reunion? No, but that's not a spell. Like that's a story event. That's not really a spell.
I mean, near-death experience is also another spell.
Yeah, I mean, they gave Jace Gifts Ungiven. I mean, that's not his thing.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's unreasonable for Cathartic Reunion to be in there.
Yeah, Cathartic Reunion could be, and it's a really big hit.
Wanna hear Big Letdown if they print it? Shock.
Ugh. That would be terrible.
Yeah.
Come on.
Or Chandra's Pyro Helix.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, there's a lot of stinkers that they could have come up with. I anticipate at least one.
You know what's a card I actually wouldn't mind? Gutshot.
Oh.
They're not going to make it, but I actually wouldn't even be mad. I'd be like, you know what? Gutshot is actually a fun and cool card.
You know, unlike the past ones, they've never put more than one Planeswalker in, so it seems pretty clear they're not going to do that again. I mean, they're not going to add another Planeswalker.
But no. Imagine if it was just the Chandras. Like all of the warriors.
But
Chandra has
a lot of cards with her name in the title now that are not walkers. She's got fully 14 cards. So there's kind of a lot to pull from, but she has a pretty broad range of stinkers. Like various creatures that reference her in different Planeswalkers. They're not going to do any of the Planeswalker deck ones, of course. But Chandra's Ignition is a kind of a boring card that they could put in just for the name recognition.
Chandra's Phoenix was actually a... No, wait, was it? Was it?
Chandra's Phoenix was played, in Standard a little bit.
They might print the Regulator. Chandra speculated the artifact.
That'd be interesting. I don't consider that card to be any good.
It's fine.
Pyromancer's goggles?
Oh.
Ooh.
Now you're
good
talking.
Good call. Yeah.
Now you're talking.
That was a good pull. Yeah.
Yeah, they could do that.
Would they print something like PNLR?
I don't think so. I mean, it's still a spell book.
Yeah, I would put it on the list, but it's interesting because we've gotten so much Chandra-specific story. Unlike most other characters that are the Gatewatch, obviously, but even other Planeswalkers, she's almost unique on the list of all characters that we know other characters in her family and her life, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know Jace's mom. We don't know Liliana's mom, so to speak, but we know Chandra's mom.
Yep.
Which makes her, from a story standpoint, unique from this perspective of trying to put together this spell book. So it's not one of her spells, I'll grant you that. But I would give a pass to putting PNLR in this set, in my opinion.
Would be cool.
Not even Jace knows his own mom. Feels bad.
That's right. That's right.
Wasn't Chandra's father a topter? Do you remember that theory?
Well.
Because that was the type of content I like.
I forget in the story what the Heart of Kieran was made out of exactly. Did we hear anything about who it was made or how it was made?
I can't remember.
Yeah. I thought it was just a naming convention, but who knows? Maybe his actual heart is in there.
For people that actually don't know the joke, so you have a card that's called Pian Kieran Alar. It's 2/2, and you get a 1/1 topter, right?
Yep.
And you can sack an artifact to do damage, yada yada yada. This was 4
you get
mana.
Two
for...
topters.
Oh, yeah. It was 4 mana for a 2/2. And then you have a card called PNLR, which is for 3 mana, a 2/2, and you get one single topter. So if no power or toughness was lost, and only thing you lost was one, you know, topter, and Chandra's father died.
Yeah, then Kieran is obviously just a topter that costs red.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was the best. I was like, I wish that it ends up that was actually true.
It's pretty clear which cog wasn't pulling its weight in that relationship.
I wish they listened to some of the stupid fan theories and be like, you know what? Sure. It's this. Okay. I wish they'd listen to our stupid fan theories and make Agroskos the most powerful guy in the universe.
Yeah, but sadly they retconned him out of existence.
I'm super pissed about that thing. Because holy crap.
They do need to be careful, given this familial connection between both Chandra and her parents, as well as Jaya Ballard now, that they can't... Well, I mean, this is tongue-in-cheek, this observation, of course, but they run the risk of cherry-picking cards from a future Jaya spellbook if they're not careful, right? Because a lot of the cards that Chandra has and the story beats that are represented there are inexorably tied to Jaya in the story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Jaya's would be quite easy. You put, what, Incinerate? You put Simeon Spirit Guide?
Nice.
What's it? Sizzle is one of hers, right?
Jaya's Immolating Inferno...
I mean, Jaya Ballard, the actual creature one.
I think it could.
And the Planeswalker one.
Which one?
Both creature and the... I mean, you put the good one. Not from the Warlord's part.
Oh, okay.
Unless you really like that one.
I think both of those Jaya Planeswalkers are defensible. Like, the War of the Spark one is obviously it's an uncommon, it's simpler.
Yeah.
But the static ability is really potent. Mm-hmm. If another red source would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals that much plus one. That's actually a really good effect.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to use Jaya Ballard, the Dominaria one in EDH, and I just end up cutting her from every deck I put her in. She just doesn't pull her weight, I'm sorry to say.
But yeah, to not pull from her spellbook, you give Chandra the red elemental blast.
Yeah.
And you put the pyroblast into Jaya's.
There you go.
But you could put actually good cards. Pyroclasm, you could put pyroblast into that one.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Incinerate is a card, I guess. Mox Monkey is one of her cards.
Mox Monkey?
Gorilla Shaman.
Gorilla Shaman.
Oh yeah.
But
that's literally the first time I heard someone call the Shaman... words.
Yes.
That's literally the first time I heard the name Mox Monkey.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been there for years.
Yeah, that's the old vintage moniker for Mox Monkey.
Yep. Of course, Simeon Spirit Guide, and I don't know. Don't know if there's anything else that's actually good to be printed with her.
Worldfire.
Honestly, I could see it, yes. Pyromancer's Goggles. Also references her. It's not hers, but you know.
Jaya is credited on 26 cards for flavor text. Mm-hmm. One of which is chicken egg, where she says, "That's a lot of nuggets."
Nice.
But yeah, they could print a bunch of cool cards.
Definitely.
But what actually could be the next spellbook? It's probably... since we're getting a green pack this year, is it fair to say that it's going to be Nissa next year?
Nissa what's her name?
Lily.
The green, mono-green Planeswalker.
Oh, they're not going to do Vivian. She's too new.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I would assume they're going to finish the Gatewatch before we get other spellbooks. But maybe, what do I know?
Maybe they surprise us and do something like Signature Spellbook Urza.
Ooh. That would be good.
That would be ridiculous.
With the first printing of an Urza Planeswalker in it.
What, the Blindseer, or...?
No, just make an like a legitimate, playable Urza Planeswalker, put it in that product, and, I don't know, put it in the Commander product of that year?
Well, we already have Urza's head.
the headmaster.
That's right.
Unfortunately,
but obviously, Urza's spellbook would be just a colossal accumulation of power, in my estimation.
Mm-hmm.
So you just spin the power 9?
Yeah, why not?
I don't think those cards are actually attributed to him.
But would you be surprised?
Well, conceptually, no. Urza has, obviously, the Urzatron lands as his namesake from a land standpoint, in addition to his factory, of course, but his brother... has Mishra's workshop and Mishra's factory. And so I've got to give it to Mishra in terms of potential brokenness from a land standpoint.
Power Stone is his.
Yeah, that's not very impressive. The cards that bear...
I was going to say actually the Might Stone, not the Power Stone. Might Stone and the Meek Stone are in his eyes. Karn.
Yeah, Karn is a good one.
Toledan Academy is his.
There you go. That's a good point.
You can actually print a bunch of busted things and see, like, yeah, that's, you know, his.
I would be probably most excited for the actually cheaper versions of foiled Urzatron lands.
Oh.
And they could take the opportunity to print his Pope hat, Urza's Mitre.
Mm-hmm. People forget that he used to be a pope. But
oh,
I think
card,
it was actually...
I forgot that card's reserved.
For some reason, yeah. Because people can't experience the might that is... Urza's Mitre.
It has might right in its title. You already explained it.
What does it do again? I forgot, actually.
It's a trigger. Not... Whenever an artifact you control, it's not even your opponent's artifacts, it's just you control, is put into a graveyard for the battlefield. If it wasn't sacrificed, which is inexplicable, you may pay 3 generic mana. If you do, draw a card.
But honestly, that art is actually wonderful.
The art is wonderful. That's the primary reason that I own a copy of this card. But
that's the only ability good thing
is
about
so
the art.
Yeah, the ability is so ridiculously restrictive. See, this is back in a time, and this time lasted for quite a while. But in the early days of Magic set design, they basically so you might in current Magic sets, if you were to graph the ungraphable, like the notion of power or strength or something or rate or something, all these concepts we frequently talk about, if you were to graph those things on a curve across all cards, commons, uncommons, rares, and mythics, you, in my expectation, you would see something that's close to a bell curve. It would have bell curve like characteristics, let's put it that way. It'd be a hump around some kind of center point where the cards average, and there's a lot of cards in that power band because so many of them are developed for limited these days, right? And then you have some spikes at the outer edges where there's mythics that are ridiculous, or cards that were mistakes in design, whatever. In early sets, Alpha, Beta, Antiquities, Legends, that kind of time frame, there was no such bell curve. There was just this scatter plot of card power, and so many of them were down in the lower edges where it's completely ridiculous. What were you thinking? And Urza's Mitre is one of those cards. And then so many of them are up at the top edges, like Black Lotus. Like, what were you thinking? There was no uniformity. Any card you just grabbed out of the set could be at any point on that spectrum, and there was basically nothing to predict how good or bad a card was from the early design. And this is one of those ones that is just inexplicably on the low end. They were so afraid. They were somehow so afraid of you drawing a card more than once that even if you sacrifice, like, you can't sack Black Lotus for 3 mana and then draw a card with this because that would just be too good. And yet they printed Ancestral Recall.
I mean, look into stuff. Yeah. I'm just waiting them to print a fixed version of Ancestral Recall, which is 1 and a green. Target player draws 3 cards.
Well, they're not far from printing something like that.
I mean, give them like 1 or 2 more sets.
Yeah, there you go.
1 and a green. Take an extra turn.
Well, they did Instant. Make a 1... There is a 1 and a green, take an extra turn.
Seed time?
Yeah.
Yeah, but just, you know, 1 and a green. Easy. Is balanced because it's green.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Seed time is kind of like the, you know, the spawn of Time Walk and Veil of Summer.
It would be really nice if Seed Time also drew you a card.
And counter the spell. Why does that card do so many things? Stupid Veil of Summer, what the hell?
Ah, jeez.
I'm just surprised it doesn't say you win the game.
Right. But,
well, you know, after it, you're kind of in a spot where you're probably gonna win.
You mean after my girlfriend attacked me with her brush, and I was like, okay, I'll cast the Fire Covenant. I'll pay some life, I'll kill a bunch of her stuff, and then she will summon me and dealt me even more damage.
Ugh.
And drew a card on top of everything.
Oh, and I'll just draw this card. Yeah, okay.
No, I looked at it, it actually dealt me like a bunch of damage. I drew the top card, I was like, oh yeah, I'll just scoop now. No, actually, no need to play anymore.
So, anyways, talking about some reprints, we did get a pretty decent reprint set in Mystery Boosters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, lads, what's your opinion on the Mystery Booster?
Do any of you like Chaos Draft?
Oh, yeah.
I tried Chaos Draft once, and it was both horrible and amazing at the same time. Because it included Kamigawa.
Oh,
and,
God.
You know, getting a 4-mana 1-1 was actually a good pick. So, yeah.
Well... And that experience, obviously, I know a number of people have had that experience with Chaos Draft. I've played in a number of them over the past couple of years, and it's a pretty mixed bag, of course. But I do think that the theme of Chaos Draft and the root of the thing is very strong. Experiencing cards, just a hodgepodge of cards throughout Magic's history all lumped together, if you curate that list and make it a little closer to a cube, then I think you get kind of a fun sweet spot where it doesn't necessarily have the power that some cubes have, of course, and it doesn't have the extreme low end or dyssynergy of parasitic mechanics that you can get with many combinations of Chaos Draft. I think that that spot in the middle is pretty ripe for reprint sets that are fun, and if you gear them toward limited like they obviously did here, then that's pretty awesome. Combine that with the fact that the product itself is directly tailored toward the draft experience, right? 24 pack booster boxes. I think it's pretty sweet. And the community has obviously discovered in the last week or two that the value of the reprints in the set, even though it's super hard to calculate the EV of the thing, is pretty attractive. So the boxes are shooting up in price.
I think it's primarily the foil slot that actually just boosted the whole thing.
I have seen a lot of people reporting lots and lots of foil rares and mythics upon box opening.
Mm-hmm. And,
which is pretty exciting.
Just a couple of foil chimneys just thrown in there for good measure.
Yeah. And the boxes are disappearing from TCG Player. I mean, I looked just about a week ago and you could find them for the 120 before shipping range. And there were lots and lots of them. And now there's only one page worth on my view, and they're going for 165. So community has definitely bought into the value.
I mean, it's a good set, you know, reprint-wise, draft-wise.
And they put some heavy hitters for EDH in there. Expropriate, Bloom Tender, like, there's good EDH choices. Yeah, exactly.
Phyrexian.
What's the one black mana enchantment? Phyrexian Reclamation? Is that the one?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. Lots of good EDH choices.
Mm-hmm. Chaos Warp.
Yeah, there you go.
And that card's price plummeted. Aura Shards. Used to be like a 10-euro card, now it's like 4.
And the boosters are fun to open, too, because they've got extra slots for non-commons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your typical booster is going to get you one or two rares and then a foil, which would be frequently a rare too. So the incidence of three rare boosters is relatively high, which is cool. And you can get multiple high quality uncommon.
You know what's an uncommon in this set? Demonic Tutor.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was uncommon. That's fantastic.
So I need to get a couple, I think.
Do you know which art? Of
the Liliana one.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
What makes me sad is they printed the Gideon Jura, which is not a problem. They just used the stupid archenemy art. I don't like that art. That's not a beefcake.
Yeah, they used the original art on the spellbook, so.
I mean, yeah.
Variety.
So that art is cool. Source of Plowshares is also in this set, and it's like half a euro. That's good. People should get more Source of Plowshares.
There you go.
Yeah,
Meddling Mage.
I mean, the set was just a pretty big surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a regular draft-only set, and since it has 1,700 cards in it, that it's not really going to impact anything in terms of reprints, but it doesn't seem to be a limited product, is it?
Nope, not what I heard.
Because the convention versions are still going to have the playtest cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is a pretty good trade-off.
Do you know, obviously in our current environment, things are unpredictable with Magic Fests being canceled, but do you know if the convention versions are expected to be a staple of conventions for the foreseeable future?
For this year, I think yes.
That's cool.
That's for what I heard. But it remains to be seen, and how many Magic Fests are going to happen, it also remains to be seen.
Yeah, my instincts tell me, and obviously you're right, but my instincts tell me that they will probably adjust plans. Any plans that were specific to Magic Fests for this year will probably be adjusted accordingly, mm-hmm. right? They'll make if they had a product that was just planned for 2020, they'll probably make it available for a few extra Magic Fests than they had scheduled. Yeah. It only seems... it's only good for them, right? They've probably produced all that product already.
Mm-hmm.
To your point about pricing, I just looked at a top example, Expropriate. So Expropriate from Conspiracy Take the Crown was going for $40 to $45, and the Mystery Boosters versions are going for $20 to $25.
Nice.
Big difference. And if this product is truly print-to-demand, kind of not limited edition, then you'll see some of the prices of those particular heavy hitters like Expropriate and Bloom Tender drop like a rock, I expect. That'd be really nice to be able to get Expropriate for $10 or $15 in a couple of months. That'd be sweet.
You see Wizards printing cards that people want will actually make them get the cards.
Exactly. Bloom Tender is another one that I'd really like people to be able to get for $10.
You know what's a card they printed in this set that you're going to like? Tinker. Half a euro now.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm not going to ever play it in Commander because that's not there going to get unbanned, because why would it? But it's a good card.
I love Tinker. I've got lots of foil copies from back in the day because I picked up several from playing Vintage.
Test reminded me the other day of the best Tinker play, best Tinker blowout I've seen. we were playing Cube. On his turn one, he Tinkers into Ballistic Colossus and has enough mana to put what's the name of the copy for two copy effect for two mana? The clone.
Copy artifact?
No.
Image.
Phantasmal image.
Yes. He plays him copying the guy.
Wow.
And I'm playing against him, like, okay. Echoing Truth.
Oh, wow.
He shot daggers at me.
That's fantastic. You don't often get value on Echoing Truth targeting Blightsteel Colossus. That's great.
That's why we play Vintage Cube.
That's fantastic.
Memories. Anything else we need to speak about?
Pretty much no.
Because I'm just going through the card market and seeing all the cards that are being reprinted, and I'm like, ooh.
Getting all giddy.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize Blue Tender was up to about $55 median. That is just ridiculous.
What are you Americans doing with the prices? What the hell?
I think. Yeah.
Bloom Tender was like 30-some euros in Europe, right?
Something like that, yeah.
But now it's at 16.
Yeah. Well, the Mystery Booster ones are at 20, and they're probably falling.
You know what's a big one? Recruiter of the Guard.
Oh, yeah.
That has dipped. People should get them, like, right now.
Or, you know, in a week or two.
I'm always playing on the cautious side. Kiki Jiki is 4 euros. I need to get more of those.
It's too bad there aren't any foil versions.
Yeah. Not that, because this is the not good art.
The second
one. Yeah, there we go.
And I think that pretty much concludes this episode of our anniversary episode of Elder Dragon Burial Podcast. 5 years, and no sign of, well, I'm not going to say slowing down, because we kind of did slow down, but stopping? Nah, man.
Congratulations.
Thank you, and don't be a stranger. Actually, if you want to pop on the podcast, just throw me a shout.
Yeah, you got it. And if ever you have any content or questions or topics that you want that specifically relate to Vintage in any way, then I'm your guy, so just let me know.
I'm listening to each and every of your podcasts you guys release, so...
Awesome, thank you.
I've been doing that for years now.
Yeah, like, we're coming up on our anniversary, too.
I think I started listening to you guys at, like, 2011, 12, something like that.
Yeah, that was right near the beginning, because we're approaching 10 years.
You were talking about Factor Fiction at Roll Cards.
Yeah, our first ever episode was about about recent Sturm und Drang and the history of Time Vault errata, because when we started recording, Time Vault had just kind of reached a new plateau of its rules interpretation by R&D, and we've recorded that first show 3 times.
Wow.
We recorded it once and the recording didn't work for whatever reason, because I was still new to using the recording equipment and we weren't using Skype. That kind of stuff didn't really exist, the recording for Skype, I mean. Mm-hmm. And then we did it again, and there was some problem with the audio. We got audio, but it was bad, and so we had to do it a third time. First ever episode.
Nick, does it sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
We had similar problems.
Yeah. I think it's a podcasting rite of passage. Re-record a whole episode.
Honestly, if you succeed through that and then do like 15 more episodes, you're set for life. You're going to keep on doing this.
Yeah, that's true. You're Gucci.
It does get easier. Well, I'm very grateful you invited me back on. I would like to be on again before 2 years elapse, so I'll take you up on that offer.
Again, just let us know where you want to come and we'll make something happen.
Fantastic.
So, this was episode 112 of the Elder Dragon Dirtle podcast. This was your host, Igor. With me, it was Niksha and Kevin. Say bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
And as always, the Emperor protects.